Okay, people, so, yes, Echo Chamber is here for another week of film fun, right? We're coming with another two-parter. I mean, this seems to be just the way it is, right? We're bringing you all that goodness in double features, right? So part one, before we get to, the interviews and everything like that, in part one, we're looking at, two sequels? I think it's two sequels, right? We've got a Fairy Tale Revisited. We have got a Western. We're doing the thing, people. So, hope you enjoy it. Let's get into all of our films. Okay, people, so let's take a look at Megan 2.0. Okay, so just back from the cinema, I went to check out Megan 2.0. Okay, this is directed by Gerard Johnston, once again, who co-wrote the film with Akilah Cooper, who is also back, right? The film is produced by Alison Williams, James Wan, and Jason Blum. It's executive produced by Michael Clear, Greg Gilreath, Adam Hendricks, Gerard Johnston, Mark David Couture, Judson Scott, Ryan Turek, with John Romano co-producing, and line production from Annie Weston. Chris Bacon is on with the music. Toby Oliver took care of cinematography. Jeff McKevy is on editing duties, right? So casting, that was handled by Miranda Rivers, Terry Taylor, and Sarah Domia Lindo. On production design, we have Brendan Hefferman and Adam Wheatley. Tracy Collins is set decoration. Costume design is Joanna San Juan. Hair and makeup, we have Joe Baker, Antigue McCannon, Sarah Rabano, Shannon Sinton, and Paula Taylor. So our cast. Who was in this? So returning as Gemma, we have Alison Williams and her niece. I feel it's Denise. Right, Violet McGraw as Caddy. So, we have got Amy Donald playing Megan, the physical iteration, right? Again, and Gina Davis is voicing Megan. Amelia is played by Ivana Sokonu, right? Cole is back, played by Brian Jordan Alvarez. So is Tess, played by Jen Van Epps. We've got, who else do we have? Todd is played by Mike Edwards. Christiane is played by Aristol Afari. Okay, who else is there? There is Tim Salter is played by Tim Sharp. We got the tech billionaire who I cannot think of his name now. He is played by Jermaine Clement, and Lydia Caddy's therapist is played by Amy Usherwood. So the gist of the story, 2 years after Megan's rampage, her creator Gemma resorts to resurrecting her infamous creation in order to take down Amelia, the military-grade weapon who was built by a defense contractor who stole Megan's underlying tech. So, yes. Right? Now, we took a look at Megan back in 2022. Actually, was it 2022? Yeah, it was just later. I didn't go bother with that at the cinema. I waited for it to come on TV. Didn't love it. But it's cool, right? It was built for those that like, you know, that kind of AI monster horror tech kind of thing. And it probably worked for them. But, you know, the sequel's coming. And we have to bring you all the films. So I took a look at this one. It kind of felt like they were going for a Terminator 2 kind of thing. Right? And there's definitely a scene in it that reminded me of Terminator 3. You know, the bit at the end, I think when he's got Claire Danes and Edward Furlong, and he's just like, are you going to let all those people die? And he's just like, I'm only protecting you. You're the only person I give a fuck about. You know, not verbatim, but that's essentially what he said, right? And it was just that cold kind of like, oh, fuck. So the rest of the world can die. He's just trying to, you know what I mean? And it was a good scene. The film itself was mid, but that was a good scene. And there's a similar scene like that. So there's part, it did kind of invoke memories of Terminator 2 and 3 when watching this, especially with the whole Amelia addition to it. It's trying to think of what word to use there for addition. Yeah, that's the one. Anyway, we start off, right, you know, this whole kind of journalist being kidnapped and this mission and all, and it doesn't go to plan. No shit. Right, but you see it's not going to go to plan. As soon as the woman bursts into the room, she's like, hey, how dare you do this? You know, as my man then gets a little cocky, so you just know it's, okay, this is going to fuck up somehow. I think that's the big thing. Throughout the film, you can kind of see where it's going. Right, with certain characters, behavior, you're like, I assume this will take place. Right, I feel you can predict it all if you've watched enough films. Right, I mean, if you've watched a few films, it's not that deep, right? It's not that deep, people, but that's fine. That's fine, you know? In places, you go, okay. But, right, so the kind of thing they're trying to do with Gemma, you understand it. You don't believe it, but you understand what they're trying to do with the character. You know? The caddy stuff is just that whole thing, you know, the Tai Chi, you know, and it's just like, oh, I wanted you to be, you know, the pacifist. Like, it just, you get it. And also, it's a situation of, right, that you never, in any film, TV show, whenever there's trouble at school, it's always, what did you do? Oh, they're being suspended. And it's never like, yeah, but they're getting bullied. Right? It's never that. And it's just like,
it's getting a bit boring, you know, because I'm sure at these days there's probably cameras all over the place in schools. I mean, other than the toilets and the changing rooms, you know what I mean? So you would be able to see what happened. Like, you would know this girl's most likely getting bullied when you consider everything that went down. So it's just kind of like, oh, what are we doing? You know, so it's just things like that. It's just the whole, I'll tell you everything and you tell me everything. It's just like, ugh. It's not reality, right? It's not reality. Everyone lies, you know, when it comes to the parents. You're not going to, and when I say everyone lies, right, it's not necessarily you're lying about big things. But there's certain things that you're not going to. Hey, did you have a good day at school? Yeah, it was great. And it was not. But you're not going to be like, oh, yeah, this happened. And, oh, you know, you just doesn't really happen, you know? So the characters, there's still not a lot of depth behind them. And they get more work than Cole and Tess. It really did seem pointless for those two to be back in the film. Because they're just not doing anything, right? They're kind of there all the way through, but there's nothing substantial. You know what I mean? They're doing nothing substantial. It's just like, okay, fine, let's have them here, you know? It's one of them films that I think they're just trying way too many things, right? Way too many things, and, oh, let's throw in this plot twist, and let's do this, and that will be fun. Like, the singing part was so random and just like, what are we doing here? What are we doing? Right? The first film, it felt like they wanted to be, try and be scary, try and be creepy. This one, it's like they wanted to try and be funny. And they you could just, all of these terrible jokes and moments that they're trying to engineer, like towards the end, and Megan's just like, oh, wait, I can see that you're angry and kind of aroused. And it's just like, what? Like, you just, there's a little bit of a pause. So you know they're thinking everyone's going to laugh, right? Everyone's going to laugh at this bit. Oh, it's going to be so amusing. It falls so flat, right? It falls so flat. And there's a lot of those moments, right? Even the singing part, it just went on way too long. But you know that they think, oh, this is going to be so funny, right? And it's just littered with this. So they've gone, you know what? We're not going to be scary. Let's be funny as fuck. And it's not funny. Well, I didn't think it's funny. Others may be laughing their heads off. I don't know. No one laughed in the screening I was in. Right? No one really laughed. I think there was one person maybe chuckling. But no one laughed throughout this film. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, it's they're trying to force so much in here. Right, like with the different AI components and the, you know, adding the new robot and just, you know, the acronyms. Ah, right. Anyway, because AMELIA stands for Autonomous Military Engagement Logistics and Infiltration Android. Right. I think someone maybe read too many X-Men comics and like MODOK. They just instead, I feel the first film, as I said, I didn't love it, but the story was more straightforward. This one, just, you know, the tech billionaire, right? The other robot, AI, right? This whole journalist thing, the other subplot, right? All of this. Like, there's a bit with the FBI. And you're just going, why the fuck would that be the way they approach it? You know, you're just scratching your head like, I don't even know why, right? And the fact that this is the outcome with these highly trained people, this is the, you know, there's just a lot of that, right? There's just a lot of that. And, I just found it pondering. It just kind of pondered. The squirrel suit was super, like, it just looked so CGI. You know what I mean? And that's the problem. You had these kind of parts of the film that just look bad. And this story, just the whole, just everything. I imagine they're going to do a Megan 3, right? I think there's another spin-off film coming next year, right? That's based in the universe, but not following these characters. But I bet they're going to do a third Megan, right? It just screams continuation once this is all said and done. But I do feel, because although it's not, they've kind of forsaken horror, I still kind of feel that if you enjoyed the first, this one will probably work for you. You know? It's that kind of thing. It's like that Smile film. Right? Again, they didn't work for me, but I can see how people can gravitate to them, right? And I think this is a similar thing. If you enjoyed the first, you'll enjoy this, right? I think if you enjoyed Smile 2, you'll enjoy this, right? If you enjoyed Companion, you'll enjoy this, right? So Megan 2.0 is doing its thing in the cinema right now. Enjoy. So we get into some fairy tales now, people. It is the death of Snow White. Yo, so thanks to Shirley at the Entertainment Squad, we took a look at the death of Snow White. This is the new film from Jason Brooks. Right, Jason wrote and directed. He co-wrote it also with Naomi Meacham Miller. The film is produced by, let us get to that, Cody Newton, Jordan Logan, Eric Michael Kuchmir, Kyrie Jackson, Sharif Ibrahim, Kaylee Fortin, Charles L. Bunce, Randy Brains, Naomi Meacham Miller, and Jason Brooks. It is executive produced by Sean Lutzi and associate produced by Michaela Porter. Right, Andrew Scott Bell took care of the music. Cody Newton was on cinematography. We have Jason Brooks, Stephen Carelio, and Anthony Farano all taking care of the editing. Right, production design is Brandon Napik. right? Ginger Van Valkenburg is art direction. Set decoration, we have Jonathan Rose. Jason Brooks, Callie Kinnanen, and Naomi Meacham Miller were costume design. We've got hair, makeup, and all of that. Amanda Woods, Leanne Wilson, Michelle Munez, Naomi Meacham Miller, Hannah Krutzinger, Zoe Decker, Alana Cushing, Liam Crouch, and Spencer T. Cox. Right, so our cast. Who was in this Grim Fairy Tales joint? Right, Snow White is played by Sana Lutsis. The Evil Queen is played by Chelsea Edmondson. Right, the Prince is played by Tristan Noakes. We have got the Evil Witch, played by Meredith Binder. Pollen is played by Risa May. Asta is played by Ali Chapman. Dozer, Jeremy Hallam. Sonny is played by Dylan Moore. Grimwald is played by Michael DeSantos II. Bo is played by Colin Miller. Tiny, played by Eric Pope. The Queen, Snow White's mum, is played by Kelly Tappan. Her dad, played by Tyler McKenna. Huntsman Gunner is played by Jason Brooks. What else? We have Huntsman Kaiser, played by Jonathan Holbrook. Huntsman Beckett, played by Carl Covington. Charles Lawson is Huntsman McQuid. Huntsman Wallace is Thomas Marshall. Huntsman Merrick is played by Jason Reynolds. Brendan Napick is another huntsman. And Hunter Jolgen is also a huntsman. We have got the Prince's friends, Willem, played by Milo Meacham-Miller. His buddy Jacob, played by Christopher Burnside. There's the Snow White's friends, Inga, played by Hayley Stubberfield. Sophia, played by Lydia Pearl Pence. And Yvonne, played by Holland Stuhl. The Queen's Handmaidens, played by Tabitha Bastine, Amy D'Alonzo, Leona Britt, Hannah Morrison, Olivia Lorimer. I think that's our main lot of people, I would say. The gist of the story: pursued by her stepmother for eternal beauty, Snow White flees into a terrifying forest and aligns with seven bloodthirsty dwarves, cold-blooded assassins with a knack for brutal killings. Her spirit is tested in this grim fairy tale. So yeah, it's a retelling of, a classic fairy tale, right? We've had the animated versions, the classic Snow White from Disney. And then we've had live action, plenty of live action. And live action that look at, like, the Huntsman, right? Maleficent. You know, there's been a lot of delving into this story. And this time Jason decides to take his shot, right? Which is fair play, you know? Ain't watching it, you can assume that they all had a lot of fun. Right, all had a lot of fun making it, and I don't deny some of the ideas are good, like the Evil Witch, body modification. We've got bathing in blood, just all of this stuff. You kind of go for a woman who is on this eternal quest to be the most beautifulest revered person in the land. that all makes so much sense, right? You go, yeah, of course that's what you would do, right? That's the thing. Now, the orchestration of all of that, I think that's where it falls down. Just on like the blood part, right? Blood is, you know, there's no issue, right? A lot of people like gory stuff. I think there's putting a load of blood in for the sake of putting blood in and putting blood in for the story. I think this is more for the sake of, right? And we have instances like you've got a lot of the dwarves are wearing white, right? And some of the other people as well. But when they're fighting and you see this spray of blood, end of the fight, no one's covered in blood, right? If you're wearing white, that shit's gonna stain, you feel me? But no, everyone is looking fresh to death, right? So those things, I think it's the detail when you have certain indie films, right? And there's people that really do a great job with the detail and others that just don't seem to really bother with it. And I think there's times when the story is so good, right? You can, you know, brush a few things off. Here, like, the dialogue is not the best, right? The interactions, all of that, they're just not the best. The humor is forced. So you don't buy the interactions, right? Even the interactions between supposed friends, not really talking like they're friends. There needs to be this looseness, this kind of symbiosis. And we don't get that at all between anyone. So when you have that, when the script isn't working, you do notice all the other details, right? And so, yes, the blood, that's a big one. I think there's a moment when they're going through the corridors and the camera's kind of panning back. And I think there was a bit, it was definitely towards the end, which I clearly just was like, oh no, we see this now, right? They're going around the corner and you can see there's no top to the wall. Right, you can see there's no top to the wall. The wall is clearly just it's a wooden set or something. You know what I mean? So it's just those things stand out, right? There's a bit with an attack in the forest. You have two people right next to each other, but you have the attackers only going for one person. And now, there could be a logical reason, but it's just not evident, it's not there. So you're just like, this is bonkers, this makes no sense. And especially when the attackers are coming down on the person, the ferocity would mean the other person is getting hit, but no, doesn't happen, right? Heads are rolling all over the shop from strikes that either clearly do not land or they're not of a force or with a weapon that would, you know, decapitate someone like that. You know, there's just these things and you just like, if you had just worked on this stuff, it would, you know, come off. Now, maybe they're going for like a campy, crazy actioner, right? A bit like the old school Flash Gordon, which is just batshit crazy, right? Or you have things like Starship Troopers that is kind of satirical, but also it works on other levels, right? So you can you know, do different things. But here, it's not, right? You don't get this thing that is like, oh, I see what they're doing, right? That, oh, there is also saying this, and it's also doing this, and it, no. Unfortunately, that isn't the death of Snow White, right? It is just this one story that falls very flat. You know, it's also one of those ones that puts in nudity. And again, nudity is nudity, whatever, whatever, right? But can it make a little sense, right? Like, why are we, like, the you know, the mirror was a weird choice. Usually we just see a face, right? Here they're showing the full body of people. But why are they naked? You know? Like, there's a bit with the evil queen, which you're like, did we need that? Right? It's just these very odd choices that are here. You know, obviously, it's kind of, it's kind of playing like an exploitation film. But I know a lot of exploitation films had stronger scripts than this. You know what I mean? They were batshit. They were all over the place. But, you know, it does work on a level. This, yeah, I don't know. Things just don't really make sense and add up, which is a shame. It is a shame because I imagine a lot of work went into this, right? Putting this all together. I mean, on some degree, the costumes are fine, right? The huntsmen's look creepy. So there are these elements that are like, yeah, that was well done, you know? And as I say, some of the costumes work. It's just when you then do other things, like have people fight in these costumes and there's no damage, there's no blood, there's no, you know. Then you start, you know, questioning it all. And you have music that I feel is just too loud, right? It's distracting from what's on the screen. Now, sometimes you might be like, that's all good. But it's just not helping their cause, you know? But it is what it is, right? You know, they've made a film. They've done their thing, you know? It's now out in the world, so it's kind of up to the viewer on the kind of things you enjoy. I do think this is the second film from Jason Brooks, but maybe if you enjoyed his previous number, right? I think it's Vengeance 2, right? If that is, you were like, oh, I love that, then yeah, you might want to go check out The Death of Snow White. You know? It's just one of those. Right, we had that, there was a film. Oh, what was it called? I think it was, there was The Fairy Queen, right, which is one. Now, on some levels, they're very similar. On others, you know, The Fairy Queen was, a 12 or a PG. So, you know, this is definitely bloodier, right? But, you know, as I said, if you like those kind of things, right? This is essentially kind of a B-movie. If that's your fare, you dig that, then people go check out The Death of Snow White. Okay, people, so to build to the sequel, right, we revisit The Old Guard. Okay, people, so we went back to 2020 you know, for the old guard. This was directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood and written by Greg Rucka. Right, the film is produced by David Ellison, Mark Evans, Dana Goldberg, Don Granger, Beth Cono, Charlize Theron. And AJ Dix. It is executive produced by Greg Rucka and Stan Wardowski. It is co-produced by Toby Heffermann, with line production from Kareem Abadouda and Jimmy Abunum is a production supervisor. Okay, so Volker Bertelmann and Dustin O'Colloran handle the music. Barry Aykroyd and Tammy Riker are on cinematography. Terlin A. Shropshire edits the piece. Right, we have casting from Aisha Coley, Lucy Bevan, and Salah Benchagra. Edward Gomez, Robert Lopez Gonzalez, and Paul Kirby are production design. Art direction, we have Ben Collins, Reese Ifan, Simon Maguire, Aziz Rafiq, and Tom Whitehead. Jilly Aziz is set decoration. Costumes are Mary E. Voigt. Okie dokie. Do we have... I don't see any stunt information, unfortunately. Because, yeah, I've got some good action pieces in the film. Right, okay, so let's look at our cast. Right, who was in this? So, we have got... Oh, right, I see. It's because I did that, didn't I? Okay. Okie dokie. Right, so... Andromache of Scythia, a.k.a. Andy, is played by Charlize Theron. Right, her crew, we have Joe, played by Marwan Kenzari. Nikki is played by Luca Marinelli. And Nikki and Joe, they're partners as well as part of the team. There is Booker, played by Matthias Schoenhertz. Right, so that's our four, plus our new arrival, Niall Freeman, played by Kiki Lane. Right, there's Kwan, I think it is pronounced Kwan, played by Veronica Noog, otherwise known as Noog Van Van. We've got James Copley, played by Chitwell Etifor. There is Stephen Merrick, played by Harry Meeling. And we've got Dr. Mita Kozak, played by Anna Marie Marinka. Keen is played by Joey Anash. Who else do we have? Dizzy is played by Natasha Karam. Jordan played by Metti Narrative. Or Metti Thule. Lycon, another immortal, played by Michael Ward. Geeta, played by Shayla Nix. Sadiq, played by Majid Isadi. Andre, played by Andre Zayat. Celeste, played by Olivia Ross. I'd say that's probably our main lot, right? The gist of the story. Led by a warrior named Andy, a covert group of tight-knit mercenaries with a mysterious inability to die have fought to protect the mortal world for centuries. But when the team is recruited to take an emergency mission, and their extraordinary abilities are suddenly exposed, it's up to Andy and Niall, the newest soldier, to join the ranks to help the group eliminate the threat of those who seek to replicate and monetize their power by any means necessary. So, this came out in 2020, July 2020, day after my birthday even, right? And I enjoyed it, right? I remember really digging the film. I recommended it to a lot of people, you know? It is actually, as well, based on a graphic novel, right? And I think there's two or three of them, which was created by Greg Rucka. He actually did the graphic novel as well as adapting it for the screen. So, yeah, he wrote the graphic novel series, and it's illustrated by Leandro Fernandez. So, yeah. I liked it. But, you know, the way it ends speaks to a sequel. And then once I knew there was, I think there's three graphic novels, I was like, well, obviously, they're going to make more, right? Because you'd heard it was popular. I mean, it was during the pandemic, right? So anything, people were just watching because you couldn't go out, you couldn't do anything. So it was just like, you know, TV. So yeah, big number. But the sequel kind of stalled. And, you know, then you heard they shot it. You're like, cool. But then, supposedly, there's issues, reshoots, all of this jazz. So, you know, we were just like, ah. But anyway, with this first one, because of the sequel, it was just like, all right, let's revisit. Let's check it out. So I rewatched it. And, you know, it's not bad. It's still okay. There were big plot issues I had, but the action is good. Like, Prince Byford, she's a great director, so it looks good. You know, the essential elements work here. We got, you know, decent acting from our cast. And so, yeah, like, it opens up, right? And we got Andy and her team, right? They've been asked to go on this mission. But they're breaking rules, right? They're breaking some of their rules. Now, it's an urgent mission, but it's a trap, essentially. It's a trap. So we have all of this go down. And then we jump over to Afghanistan, and we've got Niall and her team looking for a criminal. They breach, and as they're taking this person down, Niall gets, you know, stabbed in the neck. So we have that, right? And that's the genesis for us learning who Niall is. And then how she connects with the team. And that's fine, right? But, you know, it, some of the things we're rewatching, it's like the mission the group get, and you've got Booker being like, I've researched it, it looks legit, and you're just like, how much time have you had to research this thing? Because it seems like it's an urgent mission, so there's not really any research, right? And then you've got Niall, who, as far as we can tell, she's a seasoned soldier. So to not even check the bot, like, this procedure. So it all seemed a bit like, wait, what? Get stabbed in it? Come on, man. You know? So these things were, like, I think it was, you know, during the pandemic, I was mad ill, you know? So you were just watching things and not paying as much attention because it was just like, okay, something to do. Let's enjoy something. But on this second watch here, you notice these kind of little tidbits more, right? Which all seem a bit, you know? We got this team getting together and Niall's hesitance to be a part of it. But it's just like, you see how your comrades treated you because of what happened, right? They understand, you know, you shouldn't be there. This is odd. Something's weird. Something has gone down that they don't know. So she can't go back in the army. But it's just like, oh, I want to live. And it's a kind of like, to do what, though? You know what I mean? Like, I feel there could have been more on that whole thing, right? Of maybe not wanting to join a mercenary group, but being like, but where is my place in the world? You know, I don't know what to do, where to go, you know, that kind of thing would have been interesting. Andy's got this big kind of axe thing, and you feel there's probably some sort of significance there, but it's not really touched upon, which again could have been interesting. We do get this backstory of her and you know, Lycan and Quan. And then what happened to Quan and all of that, which is just like, oi, oi, terrible. But we have all of this, which is, you know, interesting, right? But Andy being like, oh, I don't know what we're doing this for. It's kind of like when you then get to, there's a part towards the end which kind of sheds light on some things. And you're just like, I don't believe that she wouldn't know at least some of this stuff. You know what I mean? So that seems a bit odd. But then the justifications for certain people doing certain things is very paper thin, right? Because I think Niall points out to one person, you had all that information. So what are you doing? And then the other person, again, is just like, why? Right? And the answers that are given don't necessarily hold up. But you think to yourself, right, if these people have done such good work and they do good work and they're good people, essentially, and all of that, wouldn't a conversation be the opening gambit, right? Be like, listen, there's the opportunity to help and do something. And what do you think? Right? Just, I feel that would be enough because the setup could happen at any time, essentially. Yeah. So, yeah. Like, for me watching this a second time, you do go, the setup is thin, man. That could be better. You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah, you had those. And also, you, like, betrayal is always this odd thing. And within films and TV, like, the person betraying, And then suddenly when they're betrayed, they're like, wait, what? And it's a kind of like, you can't seriously tell me you did not even think that they may fuck you. Right? How would we, you know, you're not new to the world. And especially these people, not new to the world. So it's, you know, that kind of thing is also, it's so odd. And, you know, I feel there could be a legitimate way of telling it, right? Where someone betrays and then is surprised. But to try and act like they didn't even see it coming doesn't really hold true, you know? Doesn't it really hold true? But as I said, there's other elements here that do work and still make it a fun film, you know? It's just, yeah, there are holes, right? There are these gaping holes, right? Gaping holes of where the film seems to not pay enough attention to, like, its characters and their motivations and how they would interact and navigate the world, right? Yeah, just some of that is a bit iffy. You also have, you know, and it's one of those pet peeves, right, of people being in the desert or just doing a load of grimy stuff but not looking that disheveled, right? Looking pretty fresh and clean and all of that. Where you just be like, yo, you're fighting in a desert, right? You're doing all of this shit. You're going to be a bit messy. You're going to be a bit messy. And there's that bit towards the end. And you just think, I think most people understand there's mad video cameras in London. So feel there were other ways to move away from a certain thing towards the end. Like, yeah, you know? But as I said, I think it's the action is decent and you are kind of curious about the story. How they came to pass, the things that happened. So, you know, with all of that and then the way it ends, I think there's enough here for you to want to see a continuation, right? I feel there's enough for you to want to do that. You know, so, yeah, The Old Guard. Didn't enjoy it as much as I did the first time, but still not bad. Not bad, you know? There's still enough elements for it to pass the time, right? So yeah, that's it, people. That's the take on The Old Guard. Okay, people, so now we have The Old Guard 2. Alright, people, so yeah, The Old Guard 2. Boy, it's been 5 years, right? 5 years since the first film, you know? So this time around, Victoria Mahoney takes the directing chair. It is written by Greg Rucker. He returns. This time he is joined by Sarah L. Walker. Okay, the film is produced by Charlize Theron, Beth Cono, Don Granger, Dana Goldberg, Mark Evans, David Ellison, AJ Dix. It is executive produced by Marco Valerio Puccini, Dennis L. Stewart, and Greg Rucker, with line production from Michael Williams. Ruth Barrett and Stefan Fum took care of the music. Barry Aykroyd is on cinematography. Matthew Schmidt edits the piece. All right, we have casting from Emily Brookman and Lucy Bevan. Pakai Meduri is production design. Laura Bonney, Federico Kahlo Carducci, Marco Fabato, Andrea Migalaccio, Alex Stanucci, Vladimir, Andrea Simonetti, and Brizide Cicilano, right, we're all on art direction. Set decoration, we have Tabiro Capasori, Lorenzo de Sicils, Paolo Fenenzi, Veronica Garbercuta, Monica Garun, Vittoria Giampoloni, and Gia Zambelli. Mary Voigt is costume design once again. And our cast. Well, obviously, we have our returners, right? So, Andy is played by Charlie Theron. We have Niall, played by Kiki Lane. There's Joe, played by Marwan Kenzari. Nikki, played by Luca Marinelli. Booker, played by Matthias Schoenaerts. Right. James Copley, played by Chitwell Etafor. In this one, Quinn gets a bigger part, right? Played by Veronica Nunk. Now, we have this time around the addition of Henry Golding as Tua, Uma Thurman as our big bad Discord. Louise is played by Camille Nosnitsky. Connard, played by Slavko Sobin. I think that's basically it, right? That's our main cast. The gist of the story, Andy and a team of immortal warriors continue their mission to protect humanity. This time they have to face off against a formidable new foe who threatens the very fabric of the old guard, while also dealing with the return of an immortal who is thought to be long lost. So, as I say, like, after the first film, and I remember, as I said, you know, I enjoyed the first film the first time I watched it. So I was happy that, you know, they greenlit a sequel. Especially, you know, as I mentioned, right, there were graphic novels. There was a comic series from Rackham to base this on. So the material was there, right? So you're like, okay, we've got stories. Let's tell them. Awesome. But everything stalled. It just got messy, right? It was made. And then there were all of these extensive reshoots. Now, sometimes when you hear about reshoots, it all turns out fine, right? There were reshoots on Rogue One. But that worked out. I don't know if it worked well. I would say it didn't with this, right? Because for whatever reason, this is shorter than the first film, but felt longer, right? I mean, that's kind of bizarre. It's a shorter film by, I feel, about 20 minutes. But yeah, it felt longer. We also had this weird pace to the film, right? And these things happening, and it just kind of comes across as disjointed, you know? Like, this was added in, or, you know, this was shortened and it feels that way. You know, sometimes you'll watch something and it just seems seamless. This really did not seem seamless. This just felt so uneven. It was crazy. You know, we got this new villain, right? Discord. And we got Tua. Two new immortals. Now, with all the lore that was set up in the first film, the new additions seem very odd, right? In some ways, this kind of felt like Highlander 2. As you know, in Highlander 1, we're told there can be only one and all of this. Then suddenly, Sean Connery's back. You know what I mean? The aliens. It was just all over the shop, right? And with this, because they're like, oh, we have dreams that connect us. Right, you know when another immortal is around, right? You're meant to know all of that and sense. But they didn't know about Concord, right? They didn't know Quinn was back, right? There's all these things that are like, wait, huh? And the other big thing, because they talked about other immortals, right? Kylon. In the first film. But there's no word on Tua. Right? There's no word on Discord. I think I said Concord, right? There's no word on Discord. And, you know, even if they're not your buddies, let's just say, when they're telling Niall about all of this, surely, right? She's like, are you the only ones? Well, I mean, we all hang out. Now, there are others, right? But we don't necessarily see them or anything like that, but we know there's more in the world. There's nothing like that, you know. It's kind of given that these are the only ones, and then in the sequel there's these others. So it's just kind of like, wait, what are we doing? Where did all of this come from? You know, it's bizarre. You know, it's very, very odd. And that's the thing, because it does cut, you sense this, right? The story is all over the place. The editing is all over the place. You know, it just feels like this very odd film. You know, there's a fight scene. And at one point, it looks like it's all even. And then then all of a sudden, the person's dismantling the other person. And you're just like, what? This is bizarre, right? Everyone's been around for so long, and you're just like, I thought you were all trained. I thought, you know. If there's this big divide in the skill set, surely, right, surely we see that straight away, you know, which we don't. So it's very, very bizarre. It's very bizarre. What did seem weird? Charlize Theron's Andy, it's like she's gone all emo. At the start of the film, I don't even know, right? It's a bit strange. Wait, we don't get any time frames. So where we are from the first film, you know, how much time has passed, right? They're interacting with Copley like we're all buddy buddies now. So you're assuming a good chunk of time has gone. Now, you know, in the first day, we're like, we're not hanging with Booker for 100 years. So obviously, you know, it's not been that long, right? But yeah, it's just like, has it been 6 months, a year? Like, what are we saying? I don't know, right? There's just these things. Like, they go out Well, firstly, there's this conjecture about what something can do potentially. And on first attempt, it's like, oh yeah, it works. That works. And you're just like, okay, all right. You know, and then they go on this mission and they're like, oh, I think they're trying to separate us, but do nothing to try and stay as a cohesive group. Right? And it's these, and it's people that have fought together for centuries, but they're all shepherded all over the place so easy that you're just like, it feels like they're amateurs, but we know they're not amateurs. So what is this nonsense? It's just a weird experience watching The Old Guard 2, right? I think the best part of the film were the end credits. You know what I mean? Like, and the way this ends is so abrupt. And so, what? Like, the first film ends and we get the kind of stinger that's like, oh, there's probably going to be more, right? But it did have an ending. This film does not have an ending. It's straight, oh yeah, well you know, the third film will cap it all off. Essentially, that's it. And it felt like all build for nothing. Right? All build for nothing. And even that build, it's not like it was so captivating. And so you just think, after sitting through all of this hickledy-pickledy nonsense, you're just ending it like that, right? You're just, you know, basically tickling your balls and there's no end game, you know what I'm saying? It's just bizarre. And I feel it's probably because of all of these, you know, reshoots and re-edits and just everything like that, that there was a film, it got chopped up because, you know, it didn't screen what I don't even know. But it just feels like something that has been pulled apart multiple times and then they've lost the instructions to the puzzle. So they're like, ah, does this piece go here? I think this goes here. That's what this feels like. Now, there's going to be fans for sure, right? There's going to be fans of it for sure, which is all well and good. I don't know if enough people will dig it for us to get a third film. When you think about the struggle just to get the second. So I don't know if we will get the third, which kind of just means you're probably going to have to read Rucker's third graphic novel, right, to finish everything off. So that was The Old Guard Tales Through Time. Yeah. I mean, what the writing and the way it's all over the place, it does seem, because Sarah Walker, she's, yeah, a lot of her career's been in soaps, right? She wrote for Neighbours, Home and Away, Wentworth, right? Just all of these ropey Australian soap operas. So you're just like, I mean, that does kind of fit with the nature of the writing on this, because it does feel very much like that, right? Because you have, in soap operas, you have these weird conversations. You have these relationships that really feel half-cooked. You know, it's all very quick and flimsy. And that is Old Guard 2. Quick and flimsy, man. Quick and, well, I say quick. And I say, it felt long. It felt so long. felt so long and so unfinished. But yeah, The Old Guard 2, it is now playing on Netflix. I will be super interested to know, how did this sit with you people, right? Did you really like the first film? And then this one comes at you? Like, what's the thinking? Are you for it? Are you against it? Are you just meh? Let me know. The Old Guard 2. Okay, people. So thanks to Signature, we are taking a look at a new Western, The Unholy Trinity. Okay, so The Unholy Trinity. This is the new film from Richard Gray, who directs it, right? It is written by Lee Zachariah. The film is produced by, we've got Cameron Lessard, Richard Gray, Michelle Gray, Kelly Brooks, Carter Boehm, and Janine Algood. It is executive produced by Lionel Hicks, Lee Matthews, Jerome Ragnar-Kaufman, and Sebastian Simon. It is associate produced by Laura Roll. It is co-produced by Eric Belgu and Steve Jaggi, along with Kylie Pascoe. And it is co-executive produced by James DiGiacomo with Colin Flume Online Production. Okay, so Marco Beltrami and Tristan Beltrami took care of the music. Thomas Scott Stanton is on cinematography, with Lee Smith editing the piece. Right, Elaine Granger handled all the casting. Production design is Tesla Hastings. Lauren Norby is set decoration. Costume design is Vicky Hales. Hair and makeup, we've got Melissa Oteri, Lauren Litwin, Sierra Rose Griffin, Jake Garber, and Macy Barry. Right. I think then we go to our cast. Right. Oh, we do have stunt performers listed. So we got Duncan Vizane, Alex Terzief, Ryan Stutz, Diz Sharp, Casey McDonald, Robert Majerus, Cyrus Lizzie, Kevin Gomez, Clarence Gillum, Danny Edmo, Stu Brumbaugh, and Casey Bird, all taking care of the stunts and our cast. Right, so we have got Pierce Brosnan as Sheriff Gabriel Dove. Right, his wife, Sarah, is played by Veronica Ferrez. Right, we then have got Isaac Broadway, played by Tim Daly. His son, Henry, is played by Brandon Lessard. Isaac's former partner, St. Christopher, is played by Samuel Jackson. We've got Gideon, played by Gianni Calpaldi. There's, Julia, played by Katrina Bowden. Yeah, a daughter's not listed. A daughter Mabel, but her friend. Oh, a daughter Mabel is listed. So Mabel was played by Eddie Gray. Then there's Rachel, Judy's friend, played by Stephanie Hernandez. We've got the madam of the whorehouse, played by Tina Buckingham. There is the Beatons, right? So, Rachel's baby's husband. Well, not even her husband. It's just, you know, the dude, right? Asa, he is played by Bo Knapp, right? And he's got a string of relatives, right? So there's Austin Benton, played by Anthony J. Sharp. There is, where are the rest of them? Dum, dum, dum. Red Benton, played by Tim Montana. Butch Benton, played by Bo Linnell. Their sister, Nora, played by Isabella Ruby. We also have got Charlie, played by Chuck Matthews. Macaulay, played by Nick Farnell. Duster Beck is the Undertaker. Thomas, played by Paris Brosnan. The Innkeeper, played by Kelton Cole. Sam Scarborough, played by Ethan Peck. Father Jacob, played by David Arquette. Running Club, right? She is played by Kuranka Kilker. I feel that's probably our main group of people. So the gist: buried secrets of an 1870s Montana town spark violence when a young man returns to reclaim his legacy and is caught between a sheriff determined to maintain order and a mysterious stranger hell-bent on destroying it. So yes, that, I mean, it's kind of the film, but not quite, right? So the good people at Signature sent this one across. It feels a little convoluted. Like, we start off with, basically, we've got some prisoners. Like, you can tell by the get-up, right? So they're prisoners. It is Isaac Broadway. And he's getting led to the gallows. There's a guy in the crowd, you know, a young man in the crowd, turns out to be his son, Henry. And his dad is just like, I was betrayed. You know, you need to go and deal with the sheriff. Right? So with the urn of the ashes, that's what Henry does. He sets out to get to Trinity to find the person that killed his dad, supposedly. And that all unravels this whole craziness, right? Because he's befriended, kind of fed a pack of lies, and we're kind of on that journey as he's learning the truth and who to trust and all of this. But it's just not that consistent, right? It's like, it's getting played like he's very naive, but then he seems to know the wherewithal to do certain things. Like, there's bits where he's afraid to pick up a gun, and then he's all willy-nilly shooting, right? It's just a bit all over the place. There's no arc, right? There's no learning curve here. It's just suddenly you don't know. Oh, now you know. Right? There's a, even the crazy, right? There's a bit where he's just like, I don't drink, right? There's someone that buys him a whiskey. It's like, I don't drink. And then a bit later, he does drink a glass of whiskey and he just knocks it back. And it's like, if you don't drink, right? And then you drink a shot of whiskey, that's gonna, you're gonna feel that, right? You're going to, and especially, I imagine that the whiskey back then was not smooth, right? They weren't letting it age for 12, 21 years. You know, they weren't doing any of that. It was just like, oh, we just made some. Here you go. Right? So it's going to make you cough. It's going to hit you. But he just knocks his whiskey back like it's nothing. Doesn't even grimace at the taste. And then at the end of the film, we see him have another shot. And then we see him kind of do a little grimace. And you're just like, yeah, this is kind of nutty. Like the shots of the whiskey throughout the film are all over the place as well. Like at the beginning, it's just a little, you know, it's a shot. Then we see them get glasses that are pretty full. And you're just like, yeah, this is weird. This is, there's no consistency, as I say, right? It's, I mean, watching this, you imagine, especially, right, Sam. Samuel Jackson is having a blast. And there's these certain indie films that Jackson is in. And he plays a lot of times these unhinged, maniacal kind of characters. And, yeah, I imagine that is great for him. You know? Especially, you know, the last few years where he's been playing Nick Fury and, right, these kind of roles where you have to be a bit more maintained. So he's living it up. He's having fun. He's getting paid. But the performances are kind of all over the place. You know what I mean? Like, the emotion isn't, it's not where it should be. A lot of the times, right? There's a lot of overacting, underacting, non-acting. You know what I mean? There's a lot of that across the board here, which is a real shame because a Western can be great, right? And when you think we recently just had The Thicket, which just showed us what a Western could be. Because we've had a few dodgy Westerns in the last few years, you know? Like, it all got, you know, back in the day, right? You had, Young Guns was fun. It wasn't perfect, but it was fun, right? You had Tombstone, you know what I mean? You've got Old Country for No Men, there should be blood. Like, there's been some good ones. And of late, you know, we've got the whole Yellowstone situation. So we've seen Westerns done well, right? And as I said, The Thicket, boom, killed it, right? Killed it. So it's a shame, like, when you get things like The Unholy Trinity. Because when you look at the cast is very good. But they just fall down on other elements. Like, looking at everyone's get-up, right? The costume department. They put together some good garbs. Problem is, everything looks so new. Right? It looks so new. And you just think, all of these people living in this town, right? This backwater town, dusty as a motherfucker, right? And their clothes are fresh, no dust, no dirt, no grime, no wear and tear. nothing at all. And you're just like, that's not plausible, you know? Especially you have people like, you know, riding through, being on carriages, doing all of this, fighting in the dirt, and their clothes still are crisp. So it's very odd. You have people in fights, and there's not any real damage, right? They try and put a bruise on Henry's face, but the bruise stays the same, doesn't get any darker, which that kind of bruise would, right? Doesn't get any darker, right? Doesn't go that weird colour, you know? Sometimes people got a little bit of blood on them, but then that's it. When in theory, that would be leaking all over the place, right? There's a bit when, it's Pierce Brosnan's character, Gabriel, gets shot in the, no, it's not, it's Henry gets shot in the leg, my bad. And he's limping, but there's no blood dripping where, like, after he's dragging his leg, like, and you're just like, huh? You have people that are meant to be savvy, right? Meant to be savvy and can understand what the world is, right? So Gabriel's wife, Sarah. But when you get someone giving her a story that is clearly full of shit, she's just like, oh yeah, I'm buying this. And you're just like, I mean, like, it wasn't even told well. No one would buy that story, right? Again, she's seen everything, heard everything, but someone says something and then she's all freezing and you're just like, would you really? You know? It's just these weird things which they're doing to take the story to the next place, right? So you see that. But you're now having the character play against grain, right? Play in a way that doesn't make any sense for what you have done with the character leading up to this moment. You know what I mean? It's just all of these odd things. You have people, supposedly, right? You've got, what's the running club, right? You've got her. Now, obviously, she's Native American, right? And they are expert trackers. But You have people creeping up on her, and you're just like, I mean, she would know, right? She would know. Because her parents were guides and all of this, so they would have even passed that. So it's not even it's like her parents would have taught her all of this stuff and all of it, you know what I mean? It's just these things that make sense, right? You have people, just the shooting parts of it. When a gun isn't even lined up on someone and then someone's dropping, or when you are shooting directly at someone and then not dropping, right? It's just these weird things, shooting through a window. Look, these are shitty bullets back then, or just powder, right? So that window is going to throw the trajectory of a bullet, right? It's just the things that aren't getting taken into any sort of consideration. That is what is so baffling with this. You know what I mean? So baffling. And then you have these other weird scenes, like there's a bit towards the end, right, where you've got frigging Rachel, and someone's like, oh, thanks Rachel for, you know, not keeping to, yeah, giving an exception to your rule. And you're just like, I don't know why this scene is even here. Right? Like, this is a weird thing to throw in. And it's just a lot of these things make this story very uneven. You know what I mean? It's just got this disjointed feel to it. Right? And I was hoping for so much more. So much more. Which is a hell of a shame. Hell of a shame. Accents are all over the place. You know? It's an odd one. The Unholy Trinity is a odd film, unfortunately. I'm kind of like, I don't know, right? Because Pierce Brosnan even has made some kind of ropey films, right? The last few years. And probably if you're a fan of some of those, you might enjoy this, right? Like stuff like Fast Charlie was kind of, it wasn't the best. Now, it wasn't terrible, but it could have been better, right? Like, oh, the Netflix film he did, The Outlaws, not good. But I guess this is along that type of acting. You know what I mean? So yeah, if you enjoyed that, then you might get along with the Unholy Trinity. You know? I guess it's kind of a similar thing with Sam, right? Some of his, you know, indie films have been rather ropey. Right, so if you've been a fan of some of those, right, then I think you might like this. And unfortunately, we've had the opportunity to look at some of those ropey ass films. You know what I mean? Yeah, we looked at some of those. Boy, and you do think, oh, if only I could have get that time back. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, so if you think about stuff like, oh boy, what have we got? What have we got? Damaged. Right? Damaged or Argyle. You know, if those kind of things are your cup of tea, then yeah, Unholy Trinity is going to be for you. So, people, it is, man, it's dropping on, it's dropping on the 7th, right? That's when it's going to be available on VODs. And on the 21st of July is when it will be available on DVD, if that's your bag, right? So keep those dates in mind. That was The Unholy Trinity. Okay, people. So, we're going to look at Jurassic World Rebirth now. So sit back and let's go. Well, people, we have a new Jurassic Park film in the world. So, I decided to go check it out. It is directed by Gareth Edwards. It is written by David Cope. The film is produced by Frank Marshall, Patrick Crowley. Executive produced by Dennis L. Stewart, Jim Spencer and Steven Spielberg. Janine Moda is co-producer and line production from Winston Azapardi. Alexandra Desplat took care of the music. Jonathan Matheson is on cinematography. Right, Jabez Olsen edits the piece with Gina J taking care of all the castings, you know. We have James Klein on production design. Art direction is Andrew Ackland Snow, Bill Ambrose, Andrew Bennett, Cesco Bonelli, Alex Cameron, Charlo Daly, Gavin Fitch, Daniel Frank, Mark Harris, and Gary Joplin. Rob Cameron was set decoration. Sammy Sheldon is costume design. And let's go to our cast. Okay, so Zora Bennett is played by Scarlett Johansson. Her team, Duncan Kincaid, played by Marcella Ali. There is Nina, played by Philippine Velg. Leclerc, played by Bashir Sylvain. Bobby Atwater, played by Ed Skren. Yeah, that's all of them. We now have got Martin Krebs, played by Rupert Friend. Dr. Henry Loomis, played by Jonathan Bailey. Then there's Ruben Dallaggio, played by Manuel Garcia Ralfo. His eldest daughter, Teresa, played by Luna Blaise. His younger daughter, Isabella, played by Audrina Miranda. And Teresa's boyfriend, Xavier Dupes, played by David Ikono. Okay, so Williams is played by Adam Loxley. DeSanto, played by Nim Finlay. There's Van Dirks Barman, played by Julian Edgar. The helicopter pilot, played by Lucy Thackeray. Cop, played by Billy Smith. The helicopter co-pilot, played by Johnny Lavelle. The gist of the story, 5 years post Jurassic World Dominion, an expedition braves isolated equatorial regions to extract DNA from three massive prehistoric creatures for a groundbreaking medical breakthrough. So, yeah, that is the gist of things, people. Now, like this franchise, I enjoyed the first film was a lot of fun, right? That was a lot of fun. Everything since has just been a bit dumb, right? Like, just it never really makes a lot of sense, right? You've got kids involved, and you're just like, wait, why would the kids be here? You know, you always have the same scenarios. And so it just gets a little repetitive. And then they had the, oh, you can talk to the dinosaurs in the last few ones, which was just bonkers, right? It was bonkers. But, you know, because we try and bring you everything, we went and checked this one, right? And I will say, the beginning, because we open up with this whole lab situation, right? Because you have to have an incident that creates, you know, the reason for certain dinosaurs to be doing what they're doing. So we see this lab incident. And I think this is set before the original Jurassic Park, essentially. Right? It happened ages ago. But even, which is one of them things, right? So they're developing these even bigger dinosaurs. But it's only now that anyone knows. And you kind of think, after all these other films, there would be like, I feel there's another secret. Nothing like that at all. Anyway, that's kind of beside the point, right? So we then are with, a doctor, he's, basically traveling. Well, not the exec is traveling. And that's when Zora, meets up with him and they talk. And he's like, we're doing this expedition. They then meet up with the doctor, right? To kind of go, okay, and so we need you, right? So now we have Henry Lomas, Martin Krebs, and Zora Bennett. All they know each other now, right? So we have this, and then we jump to this family who are taking this boat trip. Right? So we've introduced our main principles. Zora goes to put a team together, so that's when we meet, the rest of them, Duncan, LeCook, Nina, Bobby. All right, so we're now on our journey. And the very beginning part, right, when they're talking to Loomis, because it's just like, man, no one cares about dinosaurs anymore. And you'd be like, all of that makes sense, right? Because after a while, you know, you can imagine dinosaurs suddenly back in the world. Everyone will want to go see them. Everyone will want to check them out and be like, wow, what's this? But after seeing stuff on the news, you know, they've already invaded New York. They've done all these other things. People are a bit like, we know what they are now. Right, so obviously these exhibitions will be waning off. People's interest is gone. So all of that, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. All right, okay, what are we going to do with this? Where are we going? But then it's this whole, obviously, corporation wants to do this medical research. And so they need, we get all of this. And you're just a bit like, I feel we've done this before. Right, I think we've done this before. Even the whole incident to get more money, just, it's kind of flat, right? There's so much of this that just feels a little flat, right? Like, it's devoid energy. We have got big dinosaurs doing their thing and attacks and potential attacks and all of it. We have all of that, and you're like, okay, that's all fine, but there's no heart to the film, right? That feels like it's the big thing. Where's the heart to this? Where's the reason for me to care? Right, you introduce these characters like Teresa's boyfriend. And that whole thing is just, Xavier feels like such a caricature, right? That it's just like, oh, we'll have him be antagonistic, or have him be, and you're just like, firstly, if you planned out this journey, you've got to be, it would have been really like brought home. This is the important things we have to do for this shit to work. We're on a small fucking boat. That's the thing. You're on a small boat. I don't know if you're bringing your fucking daughter's boyfriend so you can hear them bang, because the quarters are going to be tight. Like, no, I don't feel anyone's doing that shit. You know what I mean? But, yeah, the character's just stupid. And later in the film, like, there was a moment of like, oh, I can see who you are now. And just all of this stuff, it's just nonsense. Because firstly, one good deed does not make a good person, right? But it's these things that happen over months and years and all of that suddenly happen in a space of, you know, minutes, essentially, right? So they're not doing anything to build up any sort of empathy with the audience. So we have that. There's this moment between frigging Zora and Duncan. And again, there's no real heart to it, right? It's talking about like the personal side of things. And oh, how are you? How are you? And it's, oh, this is going, oh, this is good. And you're just like, what is this scene, right? What is it for? It's literally doing nothing for me. And it just feels like waste, right? It feels like a dead husk, right? On a fucking, you know, desert plain. That's what it felt like. It was just like, this is so stupid. Right, and there's a few of these kind of moments, right? You know certain characters are dying because there's no development on them. As I mean, right, in any film like this or when they don't, when you have this big cast, right, or a big group of people, and all you essentially get on some of them is a name, you guarantee that those ones are the ones dying, right? Those are the ones going to die, or at least die first, you know? And we get that. And a few of the deaths just feel so anticlimactic, right? Like, in situations where, yeah, they should know better. Right? Who's really putting themselves in that suit? Like, what are we doing? You know? So we have that happening. I don't know where the parental control is. Because you're now fucked, right? You're now on this deadly island. And also, the little girl supposedly likes dinosaurs. So has done and now there's all this now information on dinosaurs because they're back in the world and there's all these incidents have happened. So, you know what I mean? There's all of these things that the world or anyone at least interested would know. But you still have this girl doing some stupid fucking shit, right? Firstly, just because a dinosaur is tiny doesn't mean it's harmless. But we do want to throw a cute dinosaur in there, which again, why? Right, this dinosaur does nothing for the story. Did you want to create a plush toy out of its likeness? I don't know, but I don't know why it's there. Right, but the big thing, this girl, this little girl, keeps on disappearing and doing stupid things, putting herself in danger. I mean, like, everyone's putting themselves in danger. Like, you're on a Jurassic Island. Are you really, firstly, drinking lake water without boiling it? And are you just going into a lake? Because we know there's aquatic? There's dinosaurs that live in water. So to just go into the water just feels kind of like, are you sure? Are you sure? You know? So we have that. There's just all of the, like, if lights and music suddenly comes on, surely you'd go, this could be something that attracts, right? Because you know lights and noise attract animals. We know this. So why wouldn't it be the same with dinosaurs? And why would you just keep standing there? I mean, at least look to see, okay, where could we find good accommodation shelter? Where would that, oh, that building, right? So at least you know, okay, and you have a point to run, but nothing, right? There's just no sense to these people involved, right? They want to try and throw out this love interest situation, which, again, it feels so forced and rushed that you're just, I wasn't interested. I didn't give a fuck, you know? So, yeah, it's one of them films just full of stuff that feels flat or doesn't make any sort of sense. Which, is, I mean, it's a shame. Like, the direction was fine, right? The direction, you know, that was decent enough. But the script is just so flim-flammy, so paper-thin, that, I don't know, like, the performances were fine. They're not going to set the world alight. There are, as I said, there's things that characters do that just seem stupid. Now, the actors do decent jobs with those moments, but again, it's all a bit, yeah, what are we happening, right? There's the emotional depictions from the characters, they don't do a bad job with some of this. There are some where you're just like, I don't know what that is. But that's, you know, there's so many blah points to this, right? Like the script, you know, like the emotional components. You know, there's so many of these that some of the flat moments on portrayals, it's the least of the issues with the film, you know? I don't think it does anything to reinvigorate or just make you reinvest with things, you know. But here's a rub, right? As I said at the beginning, like in the other Jurassics where you're now talking to dinosaurs and all of this stuff, if you like that though, right, if you enjoyed it, and there's no shame, right, just you do you, enjoy what you enjoy. World be a boring place if we all like the same things, you know? But if you like those other Jurassic films, you'll dig this. This is for you, you know? This is for you. So I think that's the way you need to look at it. Did you vibe with the other Jurassic films? If so, you'll probably want to go check out Rebirth. If you didn't like the other films, I don't think this is going to change your mind one little bit. Don't think it's going to change things. But yeah, if you're already a fan, boom, stay on the train, people. Jurassic World Rebirth is now in the cinema, right? So yeah, hopefully you enjoy it. But all right, one thing I will point out though, right? The film, like, one of the components is a cure for heart disease. Right? One component is a cure for heart disease. I mean, one of the cures for heart disease is stop eating processed bullshit. You know what I mean? Do some exercise, right? Like, that you don't have to go to a dangerous island full of deadly dinosaurs, you know, where, yeah, just get people to do a little bit extra exercise a day and stop eating processed foods. Boom. There you go, cure. Film not needed. But yeah, Jurassic World Rebirth is now in cinemas. So there we are for part one. It was actually three sequels. I forgot, right? We got the horror, we've got the superhero, and we've got the dinosaur. So yeah, we did all of that. And all the other stuff in between. Did you have a favorite? Is there any of these this week's films that you've seen, you dug, right? You disagreed with me or my take on it? Or do you think, yeah, I got it right? I don't know, people. Let me know, right? You can comment on Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, all of them things, right? And, you know, the big thing, this is part one. So go over to part two right now, where we look at a new indie thriller, which is frigging great. And then we speak to the man behind it. Great conversation. I know you're going to enjoy it. So people, I will see you shortly in part two. And don't forget to share the goodness with your friends, because what kind of person are you to keep all of this shit to yourself? You know what I mean? All right, people. See you in part two. Peace.